The Weedsman Podcast. ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise. From AzmaCore Studios near Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, man.
It's the Weedsman Podcast.
I have no idea what's going on.
And now...
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Here are the Weedsmen.
You want to get high?
Welcome to the Weedsman Podcast. I'm Chris.
I am Aaron.
We're back.
We're back in 2023, the year that rock and roll died, apparently.
Already.
All of them.
It's like 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
Oh. But... Are we going to have another 2016? Is this going to be a year that takes out a lot of important people?
Right. That's what I was going to say. Isn't that what happened in 2016? Like right at the beginning of the year, people started... They want to hang on for those like holiday sales.
Right. Well, there's a bunch coming up.
A bunch of deaths?
Jimmy Page is still alive. Most of the Rolling Stones are still alive.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Oh, yeah, The dominoes will fall. It's going to be like a game of mousetrap, only it will actually work.
Half of the Beatles are still alive.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, so, well, I mean, it started off with Jeff Beck.
Yeah.
Well, let's just list them off. Like, these are all the ones that I found. You tell me if I missed anything. Jeff Beck passed away last week, right?
Yes.
Just before recording today, David Crosby passed away.
Yes.
That's breaking news as of today.
His liver was 32.
Screaming Trees bassist Van Conner, dead at 55.
I don't know about that. There's half of that band.
Yeah. Curiously, the skinny ones are gone.
Right.
The fat ones made it. Go fat people. Johnny Powers. You know that name? He's an early rock pioneer and from Detroit.
In Detroit, you're supposed to know that name.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to tell you, I couldn't name a Johnny Powers song.
But neither could I.
We'll get to that. We'll listen. Robbie Bachman of BTO. Get to the chorus. Get to the work in overtime.
Which, is that the one that sang the songs?
He was Robbie Bachman, drummer.
Okay.
So, he was the one handling that. Complicated polyrhythms on taking care of business.
Right.
Just stomp on every beat.
1, 2, 3, 4.
No, Robbie, just literally just stomp on every beat. Yeah. That's it. That's all we need to accent every one of them. Don't worry about it. Just all four of them. Just count to four and hit drums. You're fine. White people will love it. This has got to be some Jeff Beck, though, huh? I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, I wanted to get into this because I am not a Jeff Beck fan. Not to say that I'm not a fan, like I don't like his music. I know what I've heard on the radio and that's about it.
Yeah.
But I also know that like every other guitar player is like, oh, fucking Jeff Beck. I mean, he's just amazing.
I respect Jeff Beck, but yeah, not really familiar. I'm familiar with this. I'm familiar with Traffic, I'm Down. Like he plays on that.
What is I recognize that melody. Is he lifting that, or is he doing a cover?
This is. No, this, if you ever listen to Traffic here on a local classic rock station in the 90s, this was the bed when they were doing Traffic, because it's called Traffic Jam.
That's why I recognize it.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Someone's supposed to be telling you about the backup on the 696 and 75 interchange.
Where did I hear this? On hold music somewhere?
Telegraph's backed up to Square Lake.
I'm 59. Oh, there's a power line down across 696. Yes, you're going to want to seek an alternate route. Traffic is backed up for miles.
Yeah. But for me, he didn't affect my guitar playing directly, but he sure did indirectly because my guitar teacher loved Jeff Beck. Like, there were Jeff Beck posters all over the little room he sat and taught me guitar in.
What do you think he's doing that sets himself apart? Is it just feel, or is there technique that like he's pioneering?
Yes.
Yeah, both.
It sounds like he was one of the few people that was not terrible with the tremolo bar.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's feel, and yeah, he had a little bit more of a jazzy vibe to him.
Mm-hmm. I like his picks. I use the Jeff Beck Jazz 3, which is a very small, somewhat thick, it's like a half mil thick The Jazz 3 Reds.
Sounds like he was doing Dunlop. A pull-off thing, too.
What about, well, what were his big hits? What was the shit that got on the radio? He was in the Yardbirds, too. I always forget that. Wait a minute. Wasn't Crosby in the Yardbirds?
No, Paige was.
Oh. Oh, no. Crosby was in the Birds.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, here we go. No, this was a traffic. This was a straight up Jeff Beck song. See if you recognize the vocalist. We should, because I said traffic.
Oh, yeah. This is Steve Winwood.
Yeah.
This is a traffic song, you're saying?
No, I thought it was traffic.
Oh.
It's Jeff Beck Group.
Oh, okay. I follow you now.
Come on, this had to be in like tons of movies in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Was it Sylvester Stallone movie or something? Like, yeah, you know what I want? Like, let's say I get out of the Camaro, right? I put on my sunglasses.
That's
Tarantino. You guys know Jeff Beck?
Coen Brothers.
No, this rocks.
I can see Brad Pitt taking off his sunglasses to this song in some movie.
I like that. If you're listening to this in stereo at home, we got Beck just in, and he's on my left. I think I got my headphones on correctly, which is interesting, but he's the vocalist is slightly right, so it actually helps separate them.
They used to mix music like you were in the room with the band.
They did, but I think this has to be... This is a very intentional decision. What year would this be? Like early 70s, probably?
It's got to be mid-70s.
Yeah. So by this time, they're doing more complex banding. They're not just be like, put John on one side and Paul on the other.
Right. According to YouTube 2013. No, hold on.
James Brown. Yeah, they put the funky drummer all the way on one side on a James Brown.
72.
Track. Yeah, there you go.
Again, this is when I think music was in its golden age of audio production. Like, just...
It was, like, production was starting to open
70
up,
to 80.
And people were starting to experiment.
I think that's when all music sounded the best. Any genre.
But they weren't used to it to the point where they were, like, using it for a crutch the way they do now. Yes. Like, oh, we could do another take, or we can splice it, we can double track it. Let's just, like, layer everything. Oh, we got 24 tracks, let's fill them all up.
I just think in all genres of music, it was the way they caught the drums, the bass... They called everything the best in the 70s. Like, yeah, you said before they started gating everything and just fucking ruining everything. Yeah, we got 64 tracks. Let's use them all.
Yeah, you were able to get, strangely, like, you were able to isolate the musicians better and do more of the mixing post. Whereas, like, it was like, let's capture as much of the room as possible. Let's get everybody. You're doing like, you know, one take with maybe a few overdubs, or maybe a take with the band and then a track for the vocalist. You had four tracks to work with, and the Beatles worked with more than four tracks, but that was by taking 2-4 tracks and bouncing.
Yeah. I mean, even the infamous story about Bohemian Rhapsody is they had to bounce everything. The legend is the tape was so thin you could see through it, and they had to transfer it like right away.
Yeah, to get all those stacks of it, because it was just the band that was doing all those vocals, and it's just layered and layered and layered.
Which that reminds me, there is like apparently, because I've been like a cultural and musical cocoon for a decade, because you know, you turn 30. And it's all over.
That happens, yeah.
There's apparently like
this... I try and break out every once in a while, but...
This neo-soul movement, but not like neo-soul is...
Again?
That was like, yeah, pitched to us in the 90s with coffee shops. No, hold on. Let me find you an example. Like, this music I'm about to play you is less than 5 years old.
Whatever can wipe out what they're calling lo-fi now, I'm all for.
Well, I've moved down from lo-fi.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still good to sleep to.
can dig that, but just like people are, I don't know, man. Whatever tickles your brain, I guess. I hate making judgment when it comes to music. What else is there? We're judging people based on art. You can't take that away from me.
This is a band that's less than 5 years old.
Okay.
You find something a little bit more upbeat here.
It's got a very Marvin Gaye sound to it.
There we go.
I like it. I like how they produce the drums. So they sound sampled. You know, they're overdriving it a little bit. It sounds like it's a drum sample, but I can kind of tell like it's not. You know.
Apparently, there's a whole bunch of like white millennials playing soul music.
Yeah.
Instrumental soul music.
Ooh. I dig this shit.
This band is called Surprise Chef.
This I'm way down with. Well, there's
it's like I know Pro Tools is doing most of this, but the fact that they're at least going for like, hey, we all played this together in a room. You know, it's encouraging, I guess.
Yeah. I like it. I like it a lot. Is this an original composition thing, or does that? Yeah. It sounds kind of familiar.
This is a band.
Yeah. No, I just want it could be a cover, but it actually reminds me a lot of Good Humor, the Saint Etienne album. They've done a lot of albums, but they did one in particular that had this very like. Almost loungy 60s feel to it, you know?
ATN?
ATN? What's ATN?
Is that the name of the band you said?
Oh, Saint Etienne. No, you know Saint Etienne.
I do.
Only Love Will Break Your Heart. If like, look up, if you wanted an example. Right, so this would be like the 90s stuff.
Oh, sounds very...
Yeah, this is... Oh, everybody used this beat in the 90s.
This is the Enigma beat. Sadness Part 1.
Yes. Sad. Du moi. This is Enigma, fucking Deep Forest. Everybody was rolling this beat out.
YouTube says this is their most popular song.
Nothing Can Stop Us Now.
Yeah,
yeah, this is another... It's like... I love this song, but it's cheesy... 90s house inspired.
Dude, I'm going through like some like electronic music awakening or something. Or maybe I get it now. I don't know. But I also don't know what I'm listening to. Like, I feel okay. Like... Sorry, go ahead.
Look up Been So Long. B-E-E-N. B-E. Did I put three E's in there? B-E-E-N.
By...
So Long. A Saint Etienne still. This is, right. This is an example of their later, like, 2000s. And they really just... evolved their sound to be more and got more live instruments involved and stuff. But it's sugary sweet pop.
It's not terrible.
It's not terrible at all. I love it. They're good arrangements, too. You know, we'll never be the same. But it has that same kind of feel of, like, I don't know whether they, like, looped the drums or not, but they clearly had, like, you know, they just recorded drums and then made it sound like samples. You know, I was listening to... Have you heard The Smile? This is the Johnny Greenwood, Tom York, and some other badass drummer project.
No.
This
and
is
the Smile was Queen's original name.
Oh, that's right.
Which is it, The Smile?
The Smile, yeah.
Tom York, Johnny Greenwood, and drummer Tom Skinner.
Tom Skinner, yeah. This is the first one I heard, first track I heard, it very much sounded like something that could have been, you know, a B-side from Kid A or Amnesiac era. But then I realized seeing a performance of them, like, the drummer's playing all that shit.
That's what producers do now, man. Like, when we had a guy produce our old band, even this was in like 2005, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Our drummer was there to simply lay down the rhythmic patterns. He changed all the drum sounds.
Yeah. I don't know if they're doing drum replacement. They very well may be, because the sound of the drums is so crisp and like cut off and really dry.
Like everything's on a
close mic'd. Yeah, they might be triggering the drums, but he's still playing all, and the group, the shit that he's playing is pretty fantastic. I don't know that this track shows it off the best, but this is a good one that kind of shows off the whole band grooving. Yeah, this is one of the weirder ones.
Let me guess. Tom's going to sing really high, hold his notes a long time.
Yeah, there's some of that.
Oh, look at that.
It's about half this shit and half the other, like, groovier shit. But they really get into some, like, complex stuff.
They were going in a direction on Kid A that I wish they would have kept going in.
Yeah.
And they took, like, a hard right or left.
I think you might like this album, then. Yeah, I think you're catching all the slower songs. There's some funkier stuff at the beat. First half of the album seems to be more...
Whoa. There's a ton of fucking tracks.
Look, really?
Looks like they got two releases. Oh, one's a live one.
Oh, yeah. There's a live release. What does it start? What's the first track on it? The Same?
The Smoke.
Oh. It's way too loud in my headphones. I'm getting drowned out. Yeah. This one's got some crazy drumming on it.
Getting the Stand involved?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, this is where they were heading on Kid A, and they did not keep going this way.
I don't know. There's some stuff like this on, like, Weird Fishes is a really good one from In Rainbows that has a similar feel to this. I think I really like the frantic sounding Radiohead, the stuff that's a little off kilter, that's like, you know, done in Odd Time signatures or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd recommend it's a hard album to judge in snippets the way that we have. My experience was that, like, Radiohead is one of those bands that I listen to for the production value and the arrangements. And listening to this, I had a much more appreciation for the actual instrumentation involved in everyone. I mean, it's a real pared down group. Even from the live footage that I've seen, that's Tom York doing all the bass. So it's Tom York on bass, Johnny Greenwood on everything else, and that fucking badass drummer. And they've got themselves a really tight unit.
Is Johnny Marr doing something with Tom York or something?
Oh, was he? I don't know. I saw Johnny Marr play, and I didn't even realize it was him until the end of the show. He was a guitarist for Modest Mouse for a while. I was like, who's that old Brit with the shiny guitars?
Yeah, I didn't know he's in Modest Mouse until like 6 months ago. I was like, oh.
Is he still with the band? Who knows? Johnny Marr probably does whatever the fuck he wants.
At this point.
Johnny Marr, like, can I be in your band, mate?
Yeah.
Yes.
Johnny Marr.
You can be in any band you want. So what about, let's get back to the celebrity, the death of rock and roll, I should say.
Oh, it's Johnny Marr and Noel Gallagher.
Oh, really? 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 That's yes. That's an interesting one. Okay. I'd be curious to see. So David Crosby is another. That was a, I mean, Jeff Beck is a rock god because he's so influential to music in general. And just, you know, anyone who's played guitar appreciates him. David Crosby has been the writer and singer on some of the songs that Americans know better than anything else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shit that he did with the Birds and CSNY or whatever.
Or CSN or Who's and What's and whatever. Really? This is their number one song?
Yeah. Well, you know, especially now because this fucking yacht rock, soft rock shit is all coming back, you know? There was,
this is their, like, terrible 80s shit.
Yeah, this shit, people are, this is right up the alley of what people are into now.
This. I mean, this.
Yes. Yeah. This is one of those songs.
No, first of all, no auto-tune. These are three dudes singing. In a studio
all
together.
At the same time. And so if there were any errors, they would have to go back and they'd do it all over again. They wouldn't just go back and remove somebody and or nudge it.
She said.
And you know, it's like what you always say. It's those fucking harmonies. That's what makes a fucking hit record. You can get a good groove down and get something that's going to hook somebody for, you know, a few months, but it's not going to last through generations if it doesn't have those great harmonies to it. You know, a song like Happy was like really catchy to everyone for one fucking summer, but where is it now? What is it?
Yeah.
It's fucking you stupid song. It doesn't really have anything to it. There's no depth to it. It's just some guy rapping over a funny beat.
Yeah. Now there's four.
Yeah. So the previous track was before Young joined
that's
in.
That's just the three of them.
No. Yeah. It's great. Oops. I don't have an opinion one way or the other, but it's insane that you would want to add Neil Young to that mix, right?
Right.
What went through their head? Like, we've got a perfect stat. Like, we, sure, you need a fourth, but he's the one? I mean, I got
maybe the electric element.
Certainly there was that. Yeah, he was definitely rocking out harder than the others, probably. Well, he came from Buffalo Springfield, right?
Yes, and I just realized I can now not hear this without thinking of Michael Scott.
When
they take your daughter to work day,
really?
Him and Dwight are singing this at the end.
Really?
Yes.
I don't remember that. There's so much from that show that I don't remember because I just there's so many episodes. I this is coming back to me now, yeah.
Yeah. But Neil Young's in here. This is a CSNY.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm having a hard time zeroing in on his voice. Like, every once in a while, I hear a little tremor.
Maybe he's just playing guitar.
Yeah, maybe.
Then this one. If you got deja vu, you know this one. That's how it fucking starts. Again, no auto tune.
Yeah.
A new way, a new eyes to the Lord. Yeah. And he's singing all those highs. Aren't the highs him and Stills?
I don't know. I know David Crosby was definitely up there. I couldn't tell you who else was doing those high parts. And I guess so, Stills was also in Buffalo Springfield. I didn't know that. I was just reading it.
I just recently learned that.
Right. So he was in Buffalo Springfield. He went, and him and Nash and Young formed a group, and then they must have pulled Young over into it.
Rocker. They're Thrasher. Arisa found out they didn't write this. Joni Mitchell wrote this.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, totally, totally. According to this article, addition of another volatile member, Stills' erstwhile Buffalo Springfield colleague Neil Young, added to the act's commercial luster. So I guess Neil Young was like already a star. I don't know if it, like, did he have, when was the first Neil Young record?
Cinnamon. 68? Yeah, I know Cinnamon Girl was like early years, late 60s.
But was that him solo?
Yeah, that's him and Crazy Horse.
That's Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Okay.
It's like the second time this week I've looked this song up after not hearing it for like 20 years. Yep, Neil Young and Crazy Horse.
Well, what year? What year is this?
Hold on.
This has got that fucking caveman beat, like, taking care of business. But it works. I like this song.
Oh, damn it. 69.
I was close. I was going to say 68.
Hey. It's about heroin.
Is that what he's saying? Of course. Every song's about drugs, sex, or masturbation, or money.
Huh. I knew about all these other terrible covers. I want to see what you think about this one.
Let me guess. Don't tell me anything about it. First, we're going to place it in an era, and it's got to be 93, 94, I want to say.
You've already nailed the year.
That's just based on the production. Blah. Ugh.
I'm not sure you'll get it, because this singer usually sounds a lot different.
Yeah, this is not... It sounds really, but this is, I don't know, Ugly Kid Joe?
That is one Mr. William Patrick Corgan.
This is the Pumpkins, really?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they sounded before they got signed.
Yeah. I mean, kinda. Signed to what? Like, they were, their first album sounds better than this. It just, like, I have a hard time believing that it's James Iha on guitar, because, like, that sounds like some weak sauce shit, but. Like, come on, who's doing that?
Right.
Come on, man. Who's doing those slides? Like, James Iha is a really great guitarist, and he's a lot more subtle than that.
I mean, the pictures that they're showing are, like, they're all really young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Billy still got his hair.
This is, like, yeah, early demo recording or something. I definitely hear him, though, yeah. Sounds like Iha is also singing too. He doesn't have a bad voice. I wonder if they is this with what's his name on drums? Because this song sure is highlighting the drummer. They love the drummer on this song.
And that's
the mixing engineer did, at least.
That sounds like a Billy solo.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't do the outro. Wussies.
Interesting. You know, I usually like Pumpkins covers. Like the Girl from Sandoz is a really good one. Landslide.
I think they did a great job, and it's underplayed. I think You're All I Got Tonight. I think they did a great job on that.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, I think they do really well with the covers traditionally. But you know, it's early stuff. I'm not going to judge them on that. I'll judge them based on what they've done lately. Just shit. I used to be such a fucking Pumpkins head, man. I was seeing every show for a while.
I was not a fan of the turn they made on Melancholy.
Me neither. I was like, no, what I is was this? Out. Yeah, I was a big fan of the first album.
You were rocking.
I thought the second album was just colossal. It still to this day, if I just like, that's like a springtime album when I'm ready to like roll back the sunroof and enjoy some nice weather and some big guitars. That's a go-to, man.
When Cherub Rocker Today comes up, I never turn it off. Disarm,
Disarm.
They played that song so much, yeah. Like 30 years later. I'm still burned out on that song.
Yes, that is fucking. That song will never be tight again.
Yeah. Like I can even sit through Bullet Through Blood or the Rat in a Cage song. I can even sit through that one now, but I just can't sit through Disarm.
That's right. There's a. Yeah, I can't. Anything past the second album, it just doesn't do anything for me. I'm not anti-drum machine. I'm just like anti-leaning on drum machine when you have an amazing drummer.
Jimmy Chin. Maybe that's when he was all heroined out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's your replacement. You couldn't find anyone better than the.
I mean, when like Jimmy Page was all heroined out, we got this.
Yeah, but this song has redeeming qualities.
I mean, yeah.
It's a good vocal performance.
John Bonham.
It's a funky-ass drum beat.
Yeah. But, you know, this was the same band like 3 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Had given us Physical Graffiti.
I know what you mean, yeah. And maybe it's just one of those things where I'll never be able to, even if there are good redeemable songs that he's written on those Melancholy and all that stuff, I'm never going to receive it because it just hit me at the right place in the wrong way, right? You know, I was a big fan and of everything they were doing. I was collecting everything, every single that they were released on vinyl, on CD, every version, every import. I was a major fan. I had a fucking framed poster that I made a special mat that had like cutouts of stars.
It sounded like they were heading to be like heavy, like psychedelic music. And then they just go, no, never mind, pop music.
They could, it's not, and I'm certainly not against bands growing and evolving. I love it when I can follow a band over their career and they do vastly different stuff and I like it all or the majority of it. And there are a number of directions that they could have gone. It's not like they were the band that like blew up as part of the grunge movement and that was never really part of it and could have easily gone past it, right? They were never going to be stuck in the grunge movement. They were never going to be washed out with bands like Screaming Trees and Soundgarden and all those other bands. I mean, look, these bands had great careers. I'm not casting aspersions, but like they didn't really have lasting rock and roll careers. They didn't continue to evolve. They just kind of fizzled out. So I mean, hats off to the band and Billy Corgan for not fizzling out. But like, you just went a different direction, dude. And I'm not following you down that path. Who knows? Maybe we'll, our paths will converge again, but like.
Him and his buddy, Alex Jones.
I think it only comes down to if Billy Corgan aligns himself with some extremely talented people again. Like James Chamberlain and James Iha.
Didn't they reunite? Didn't they go on tour?
Yeah, I think they did.
Isn't Darcy not a part of the party this time?
She hasn't. She's never really been part of the party. Let's face it. But Billy Corgan played all those bass lines on the first album. All of it.
So basically someone was fucking her and went, "You want to be in my band?" And she learned how to play bass.
You know, who knows how how these decisions are made, but like, you're trying to get a band on MTV in the 90s, like having a female bass player was a major plus. Having a female fronted band, female singer, maybe not. That didn't do so much for you, but having a female bass player, that meant something badass about your band.
I don't think history has been kind to Hole.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think Hole was kind to music, so.
I don't think the present was kind to Hole when they were happening.
Yeah. I don't think anyone was nice to What's Her Fucking Nuts because she didn't seem to be nice to anybody else.
The Weedsman Podcast. ChristopherMedia.net.
Oh no, the Chrisleys are going to jail.
I mean, Todd Chrisley's got to be pumped.
When they handed down the sentence, he was like, oh no.
Oh no, I'm going to jail. What am I going to do? Which, by the way, my suspicions were right. Well, allegedly, supposedly, that's been he's had a boyfriend the whole time and she's known about it and it's been like a business arrangement the whole time, their marriage.
Yeah. No.
Which,
no,
if you've ever watched the show, duh.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Todd Chris be like, I gotta go slay some pussy.
Yeah. Like, but he's serving 12 years at a maximum security federal penitentiary in Pensacola, Florida. That doesn't sound like any kind of fun. I don't care how much you might like butt sex, which I'm not saying he does because it's not a given.
But
not all gay guys do participate in anal.
He's going to go to Club Fed, right? He's going.
I don't think this is Club Fed.
I'm going to go to white collar prison.
FPC,
I did white collar
Pensacola.
White collar.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I thought it said maximum. I misread. You're right. It's a minimum security facility. Yes. He is going to a, yeah. Yeah.
Going to white collar prison. We'll have a white collar prison boyfriend. He'll probably be the king of the fucking shit.
I bet.
When celebrities go to jail, allegedly, that's what you hear what happens, right? Yeah, I heard fucking Cosby was like the man.
Yeah, I saw season 5 of Orange is the New Black.
That's the one where I stopped watching.
Yeah.
Right before that season.
I think it was season 5. That's when they get like the Martha Stewart stand in.
Yeah, that's where season 4 was. She was coming to, and then I stopped watching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you saw the writing on the wall a little sooner than I did. I made it through season 5 and I was like, this show, wait a minute. This show's going nowhere.
Yeah.
It really started off promising. It seemed like they had a story to tell, and then they just kind of...
And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the show, it's over 10 years old. How Piper gets out? Come on. Really?
Wait, how does she get out?
They pretend it's a... what do they say? They pretend it's a clerical error, but it's really like they knew she was going to whistleblow or some shit. And like, oh, let's let her out. Like, really?
She caused enough stir to like...
But if someone's about to wreck your shit, you're going to let them out where they can talk to the media?
Mm, no.
Unless she
signs something.
You're going to get Epstein'd.
Well, speaking of TV, you saw the new Night Court. Huh?
I did.
What is it? Is it just called Night Court?
Yep. It's just Night Court. It's got the same theme and everything.
And how do I watch this?
NBC.
It sounds like your mom now.
Or is Peacock.
Is it on a... Do I have to watch it on my phone?
Right. Yeah. No, it's on Tuesday nights, apparently, on NBC, but I watched it, like, yesterday on Peacock.
So this isn't just one of those, like, we did a one-hour special where we got people back together and we all, or we recast, we're doing All in the Family for one night.
Yeah, no, no, it, there,
it is a full-on, we're doing a reboot.
They are recontinuing the story 30 years later.
Yeah.
Like, the main character is...
So, they're not rebooting anything, right? It's in it's in the universe of Night Court.
Yes.
Wait a minute, I forgot the most important question. How funky is the intro? Super funky or just kind of funky? Chunky monkey funky?
I mean, it's not... Really? It ain't the original.
Really?
I mean, it's still...
Like, what the...
But it's a TV team in 2023. It's
so
like...
So get Childish it's 30, Gambino up
it's
in there.
It's 30 seconds
shit.
Long. It's like... It's like...
It's true.
It's like the greatest hits
of the... They don't even have time to get to a bridge.
Yeah, it's the greatest hits of the intro, the verse, and the fucking outro. It's like the best... It's...
Hold Did they use any elements from the original, or
yeah. Okay? On. Which, you know, come on, as a bass player, when you're learning to slap, that's like one of the first things you figure out, right? Because it's easy.
That's right.
It's been out now. Trailer, trailer.
I started at Night Court, worked my way up to Barney Miller. And then eventually you get to Seinfeld.
Same showrunner made both. Same guy made both shows. By the way,
he likes to slap at the bass.
Let's see. Maybe this is it. Oh, here you go. You can judge. Your ears can judge for themselves. Maybe it's got to be out another week. But I mean, no, it's faithful. Like, you're not going to be mad. But like I said, it ain't.
But they're just reworking the original theme, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like a sterile version of the original, but nay, it's.
I mean, Dan Fielding is John LaRoquette. Oh, hold on. We talked about it. We just got to jam it out. It's that rhythm section, dude.
Yeah. That guy's hitting the fucking crap out of the bell on the ride.
And that keyboard, just he's in the pocket. Yeah.
Short and sweet, though.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the new one is that, like, it's half the length. Like I said, it's got the greatest hits of the intro, the main part, and the outro. That's it. But, so the daughter, or the main character is the daughter of Harry Anderson's original character.
Okay. Wonder why didn't Harry Anderson, what's his
name? He's dead.
He's dead?
Yeah.
When did he die?
He died, like, last year.
Oh, that's right.
Or, like, 2 years ago.
Still.
Right? What was that, Star Wars?
Yeah, but still.
Where the guy who was dead for 20 years was in it?
Yeah. If you really wanted to be in it.
No, what I thought was hilarious is I saw like a bunch of articles. The Night Court cast, where are they now? I'm like, three of them are fucking dead. That's a dumb article to write.
Oh, yeah.
Mac and Christine died the same year. No, they died last year. Harry Anderson died in like 2018.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm like... Like, literally, two people are left. Bull, or no, three people. Fuck, I keep trying to kill Marsha Warfield. The first bailiff died, not Marsha Warfield. She is alive.
The first bailiff was the older black dude. Oh, right.
It was her. Bull was always there.
Yeah.
It was two bailiffs.
Right.
Bull was always there, and then there was that old white lady.
Yeah.
And she died in real life.
Right.
And then they brought in the black lady, which is Marsha Warfield.
Wasn't there an older black dude on that show, though, too?
Well, he was the clerk. It was Mac.
He was Mac.
He was middle age.
Okay. Well.
Which, I thought about this the other day. Night Court taught me that black dudes were into Asian chicks. First time I ever saw that on TV.
You're like, that's a thing?
Well, I found out later in life it was. Like, oh, hey, like on Night Court. I see you, Russell Simmons. But yeah, Larroquette's character is the same. Well, sort of. It's Dan Fielding, but he's not a sleazeball anymore. First of all,
he's
70. It would be weird. But he's not the DA this time. They talk him into being the public defender.
Okay.
Like, they start, like, he didn't do anymore, and he's a process server, yeah. And...
Well, that's a sticky wicket, isn't it? Because, like, you're the last best-known face of your original cast played a character that is not going to fly.
Oh, he's getting Me Too'd like a motherfucker.
Right.
In 2023.
His whole thing was being sexist, right? Yes. That was his whole fucking character.
Yes.
And you would like to think that, I mean, we'd have a place now more than ever for a character like that. But along with the stick that we put up our ass, we knocked out of us any sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't have this idea of like, no, we're making fun of the type of people who mm-hmm. would say something like this.
Yeah.
But that's too long of a sentence. But people are like TLDR by the time you're halfway through it.
Right.
You're like, yeah, there's too many ifs or buts in that one. All I know is that I was offended.
But a lot of stuff in the original spirit of the show. You know, like, but
yeah.
But we talked about this before. I don't know what they're doing with the bailiff. If I got one bitch about it's the bailiff.
Yeah, you were saying it's like in Congress, like the humor of the bailiff, it doesn't seem to line up with the rest of the show.
They're trying
kind of
to
throws you out of it.
They're doing like it. They're doing a wacky type of sitcom character that I didn't think existed anymore.
Yeah,
the type of humor you're like, really? Like people under 30 wrote that and laughed. Like.
They're doing hack jokes. They give all the hack jokes to the bailiff, huh?
Yeah, and it's just, she sticks out to me like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Like, at least in the first couple episodes. Like, maybe the character will find its footing, but it's cartoonish.
Yeah, like jokes about unicorns and shit, or like...
Like, in the first episode, there's a runner that somebody's fucking with. They're changing all the names on the fucking... the board, the
board outside.
Yeah, the board outside, and it's driving her crazy, and she can't figure out who's doing it. I'm like, really? Like, in 2023, everybody's got a camera, and there's a Ring fucking doorbell fucking everywhere, you couldn't just be like, oh, that's that motherfucker doing it.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're doing, like I said, an era of sitcom comedy that, at least with the one character that I thought was over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. It reminds me of, I was going to talk about Tulsa King because I've been watching that. And that's on Paramount, streaming service, Paramount Plus. Which, strangely, don't tell Paramount, but I subscribed for like 2 months, canceled because I watched what I wanted to watch. I'm still getting it. My login still works. I don't know.
Hey.
They haven't cut me off yet. So I kept watching, and I checked out Tulsa King. If you're not familiar with it, this is Sylvester Stallone's TV series. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first time Sly has ever done a TV series. He's one of those actors who maybe he's done some like ads in Japanese in Japan or something, but like he's always like held himself as like movie star,
right? I'm too good for TV.
Right. Well, he's from that generation where, like, no, I'm a movie star. I do movies. There's no reason for me to do anything else. Anything other than movies is a step down. That was the old school mentality.
Well, Sly has failed to realize is now TV shows come with movie paychecks.
Well, I think he's come to realize that, too.
Oh,
and also,
so you get paid now.
You know, it allows you to do a little bit more, stretch things out more than you could do in a movie. Tulsa King, it's an interesting show. I'm not going to say the show itself is surprising. It's like there's nothing that's blowing me away. It's about mobs and violence and power and money like so many other shows are. There's nothing all that unique going on, but they are doing some. You know, he's playing a fish out of water, right? The old mob guy gets out of jail after 25 years. And they don't know what to do with him because he's still, you know, he's 75 years old. They're like, surprised he's still ticking, but send him out to pasture, right?
The mob don't work like this no more.
Yeah, so they send him out to pasture in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they say, yeah, we got some stuff you can run out there and kind of just, you know, kick him to the side.
Good news, it's the middle of the country. It's still 25 years ago.
Yeah, and so there's first two episodes, there's a lot of like, oh, I'm trying to get a taxi cab and I got to get an app. What's an Uber? You know, like that kind of shit. And you're like, okay, I get it.
I can't just call it the cab.
Right.
What's going on?
Why everybody got pronouns now? You know, it's all that type of shit.
Why does that man have titties?
Right. But it actually does kind of subvert that. While also playing into stereotypes, like, it has a pretty diverse cast. He gets like an Indian dude on his crew. There's a black dude that drives for him.
Where'd all the Italian guys go in the mob?
But also, like, they're all stereotypes, right? The Indian's called actually, Bad Face, and he's
actually
like,
wearing a turban.
Native American.
Sorry, you're canceled.
And that's right. There's a Native American.
So he's wearing a headdress.
And he's called Bad Face, and he doesn't speak a lot, and he's like...
Just grunts a lot? Mm, yes.
Almost that, yeah. Actually, you know, one of the my favorite parts of the cast
called Sly Pale Face.
Martin Starr, who we know from...
What's his name?
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, what the fuck was his name?
As the Satan-worshipping coder?
Yes, whose name we both apparently cannot think of.
Yeah, it's escaping me. He's also played, but one of his most high-profile jobs has been playing a teacher in the, I think it was, I can't remember if he was in both the Spider-Man movies. He might have been in both of them. Or there's been three of those now. How many Spider-Man movies have they done? He's been in a couple of them. But he plays a dude who owns a head shop. And you're trying to think of this character's name still? Yeah, it's one of these. Like, of course.
It's going to drive me nuts.
This is one of the scenes that threw me early on. He immediately, Sylvester Stallone's character starts thinking, like, where am I going to find the grift in Oklahoma? You know, who am I going to shake down? Who's got the money? Oh, there's pot shops out here, medical pot shops. And that's who Martin Starr's character, he runs the pot shop. And he just rolls in there, knocks out the security guard, threatens them, tells them that, like, you know, I'm going to keep you safe from other people fucking with your shit. All you got to do is give me 20% of your business. That type of shit. Be ashamed if anything happened here. I'm like, yeah, but this is 2022 and they were filming this. Like, that shit doesn't fly anymore. And the pot shop's a legal business. Why wouldn't he just like immediately call the police?
Yeah, right. Like, because he's trying to do crazy shit, right? You put yourself on the radar. You call the cops.
Yeah, and you do find out later in the season that there are actual reasons why his character wouldn't just call the police.
Guilfoyle.
Guilfoyle. Yes. Thank you.
All right.
Which was that his last name?
Does he ever have a name
other than Guilfoyle?
Notable alias Bertram Guilfoyle, yeah. According to the internet.
And you know what? I saw Big Eddie pop up on the intro for The Last of Us, the new HBO.
I saw him in something else recently, too. I was like, wow, I haven't seen that guy in like 10 years.
I think, wasn't he on the... He popped up on like the Weird Al movie or something like that I saw recently. He popped up on something, yeah. Hey, Big Head. I guess, how do I sum up Tulsa King? Decent enough story. It's interesting. It's not overly complex, you know. It involves the mob, so you can kind of picture where things go from there.
You know, Sly's got to be able to follow the plot, so, you know.
Yeah, but it is more clever than it needs to be. Like, the writing is actually really smart. They do a lot of character development, more than a lot of shows, really. And, in ways where they tie things together. Like, they don't just have one-off lines of, like, it would be funny if this chick said that, right? Like, that chick would have to have a reason to say that in that situation. And if that makes sense, then yes, that would be funny. Then they use it. Not just like, here's a throwaway line type of thing. So I think it's definitely worth watching. It's definitely entertaining. Sly is good. Like, it's about the best I can say for him.
There's a like, weed in Oklahoma.
He's doing a lot. You know, he's doing certainly doing a lot of heavy lifting because he's like in almost every scene. He's really, really carrying the show. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Sylvester Stallone because he has that presence. He is definitely watchable. You know, he's playing a type of character that we've seen played a lot, this kind of, this complex anti-hero. So, you know, if I could, if I'm supposed to put him up against, somebody like Bryan Cranston, like he's not really pulling that kind of weight, but he's got enough to like make the show still enjoyable.
I'm the one who knocks.
Yeah.
You know, people come up to me and they say, you know, are you knocking at my door?
No. I'm the one who's
Yeah. People come up and knock on my door and I say, hey, that's my door. I'm the one who's knocking on the door.
No, Sly. The line is,
hey,
I'm the one who knocks.
Hey, are you knocking on my door?
Hey.
You're knocking on my door? I don't see any other door around here. You must be knocking on my door. Hey, is that you knocking on my door? No, Sly. Just go to lunch.
Okay, no, I got the line now. Yeah. I got the line now. I'm the one who knocks. I'm the one who knocks. I'm the one who knocks. No, I'm the one who knocks.
Is it me? Why do I knock? Why am I knocking?
That's okay. You're the one who knocks. No, the line is, I'm the one who, I want you to accent on the I. I'm the one who knocks. All right, rap. That's lunch.
We've got enough. We can edit it together.
Thank God for the Avid deck. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
Oh, let's wrap it up on some really good news.
Ooh.
One of my, a couple of my absolute favorite albums are finally going to be released on streaming services after a long battle. De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising and De La Soul is Dead, two seminal albums that like really set the tone for a lot of the stuff. Like, you know, we wouldn't have Kanye as Kanye if we didn't have De La Soul.
Yeah, you know, backpack rap, you could argue that like helped invent the genre.
And that we could rap about things other than fucking chicks. Not that they didn't. De La Soul, like, they could, when they were telling a story about it, and so I punched a dude or I fucked a chick, that was in the rap. But it wasn't like, what's this track going to be about? Well, it's either about fucking chicks partying or shooting people. But they also, they broadened the horizons of sampling as well. And that's certainly due to Prince Paul, the producer on those early albums. But because of the licensing for the samples, I mean, look, what do we have here? George Clinton.
Yep.
All over this, right?
Oh, this is not just Needy.
There's, I'm sure if we keep listening, we'll hear others. Prince Paul was really famous
trying to place those drums. You know, like that's not the drums.
Yeah, he's
from
laying.
That.
Well, yeah, he's got the. Yeah, there's another drum loop going on there too.
Like that's from the George Clinton. But,
that guitar is the. Isn't that like a George Benson song or something?
No, that's. No, I still think that's not just Needy.
Yeah, it's another. It's another track to that. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's layering and taking...
Prince Paul's fucking badass.
Yes.
I love Prince Paul.
He is a genius fucking producer. And, yeah, he really changed the face of hip-hop and instrumental, like, trip-hop music and all that shit.
Like, you're the one... You're the only other person that knows about Handsome Boy Modeling School, right?
Yeah.
Because you brought up, I was like, what? You know about... I know about Handsome
Boy Modeling School.
I feel like you're the only other person that knows about that. I was like, I know about Handsome Boy Modeling School.
Any of y'all are interested in, like, you know, fun rap, backpack rap, trip-hop shit, like, whatever you want to call it, like, check out Handsome Boy Modeling School. You will not be disappointed. Great beats, funny shit.
When I first found him, I listened to him for, like, a week when I first found him.
Yeah.
Like,
just a he's like a Simpsons writer in the way that he layers his shit, right? It's joke after joke, it's sample after sample. It's stuff that like is fun the first time through and enriching on multiple listens where you're like, "Oh, I never caught that he was doing this."
And I just want to say that they're $60.
Yes. Father Guido Sarducci is all over this handsome boy modeling school. It's him and Dan the Automator.
Oh, yeah.
Is the other producer.
Dude's fucking.
And like they'd have like what Del the Funky Homo Sapien would like appear on tracks. They have a bunch of like.
Also, in my closet, shoes. So many shoes you can't believe. And next to it, a dwarf with his socks.
Oh, I thought I was playing the track. Never mind.
Wait, is this from the album? I don't remember this.
Yeah, it's the beginning of the album. I thought I was playing. God damn it.
So, you know, we got sidetracked. I just wanted to say, just briefly, you don't have to stop what you're playing, but the whole reason this stuff was unavailable for a while is because of licensing rights. It was just not profitable for any label or anyone to release it. It would cost them money to put it out there on streaming services, right? De La Soul would have to pay out of pocket to keep their music available to people. It's a horrible situation to be in, especially when you have this catalog of such seminal albums. And I'm not even talking about the first two. They've got great. The Balloon Mind State is, while it doesn't have Prince Paul, it is probably my all-time favorite hip-hop album. It is classic from beginning to end. It's just really great to have their music out there, not only for De La Soul's fact, but for Prince Paul's fact. This is like his seminal early work. This is what put him on the map.
Speaking of De La Soul.
Yeah.
Damsel in distress, so I stress good guy. Tarzan and Jane, more like Bonnie and Kareem. Could you be my sugar water tonic and cream?
So, like, what's he sampling here? Like, TV themes, commercials? Who knows? Like,
dude, I would listen to this shit without vocals.
Yeah. I think there is instrumental releases of this stuff. If it wasn't for you, that's my wasn't for you. That's got to be from like a musical or something, yeah. Right? Hey, because of the lady named Fame, people spot me like nerve spot pain. You put the S on my chest and inside my veins. Before that, the darky had smile for them to see.
Not a so good. The disc wanna be me due to
me being down with you. And anybody out there that's still hating on, like, oh, sample is just stealing other people, like, you fucking do it. You take fucking 27 tracks, take little snippets out of them, and make it into something that is comprehensible for other people to listen to.
Yes.
You fucking do it.
Because, well, here's the thing. This doesn't get played ad nauseum on the radio or on streaming services.
Yeah.
People like Puffy... Oh, I'm calling you out, Sean. Give sampling a bad name, where all he did was he just essentially made an instrumental track of a song that was already a hit rapped over it. Like, hey, that's sampling. No,
he heard fucking Police on the way home from work one day and started rapping over it. It was like, I got to make this a record. And he did, and it was a hit. You know why? Because that Police record was a hit. And everyone was like, oh, I like the Police. I like rap.
But this type of sampling is
recontextualizing.
Yes.
It's making it into new art. It's collage.
Yeah, yeah. It's sound collage. There you go. Yeah. I guess finish listening to that on your own time. It's time for us to go.
Yeah.
We're going to go listen to that.
Yeah, so guys, check out some early De La Soul. Check out some Prince Paul. Check out Dan the Automator. Check out some Jurassic 5 while you're over there. Check out there's some early shit, the early rap shit out there that's worth listening to.
You know, some turntablism.
Yeah, check out some Peanut Butter Wolf.
Peanut Butter Wolf. I feel like Qui-Gon right now. Now there's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Tom. Or no, that was no, he's Ben. God, Qui-Gon was.
Yeah.
Anyway, follow us on the social media at the Weezman420 on your local social medias. That's pretty much our address. Except, yeah, and go to ChristopherMedia.net where you can hit the PayPal button and the Amazon banner if you'd like to help us out. And wherever you listen to us and have the ability to rate us and review us, please do, because it helps people find the show. So if you do that, we would appreciate it. Please and thank you. You can also stay high.
Stay high.
The Weedsman Podcast. ChristopherMedia.net.